And welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Marquise Munson taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And Joe, yesterday I kind of felt like the fugitive. Had a little run-in with the law yesterday.
Wow.
Yeah. I'm a dangerous guy.
Tell us.
I'm going to tell you. I'm just kind of building it up.
Okay, yeah. Like I can't, you know.
It's really not that big a deal. So my brother is out of town, and why he didn't cut his grass before he left is beyond me, but that's beside the point. He didn't. So he asked me if I would go over to his house and cut his grass for him, which, sure, I don't care. I kind of like cutting grass. It's cathartic for me. I love it. So I went over there. Even when it's 95 degrees, that's fine. I don't care. I went over there. He gave me this code to get in his house. I'm like, cool, that's fine, whatever. So I open the door. This alarm goes off. I'm like, okay, well, I bet the code he gave me to get in the house is the same code for the alarm. Well, let me tell you, it was not. It was not the same code for the alarm. And I quickly realized that I am not going to be able to shut this alarm off. So the alarm does its little countdown, whatever, and then makes this screeching noise. So I just get out of the house and wait on the front porch because I know the police are going to arrive. The wonderful man from the Springfield, Tennessee Police Department shows up. I have to prove to him that I know how to get in the house legally. He takes my identification and then asks me why I'm there cutting grass while my brother gets to go out of town. That's a great question, but it's not going to happen again, I can tell you that.
That is a good
question. That was my encounter with the law.
What did you say? What did you say to that question?
I was just like, well, I just got short end of the stick, I guess. Man, I don't know.
I mean, your brother owes you a couple beers here.
Absolutely.
Yeah, well, that was.
So it's good to be here today.
So you never had the impulse of, yeah, maybe I'll just get out of here. Like, I'm going to sit here.
I didn't wait for him.
Wait for the law.
Yeah.
And yeah.
Look, my days of running are gone. I mean, it can't happen anymore.
Yeah. Good move.
So I'm glad to be here with you today, Joe.
Yeah.
Could have been in jail.
I tell you what. So, but he was cool and everything.
Yeah, he was cool.
Yeah, quickly. It cool. So it wasn't like you had to call your brother?
Well, that's the thing. I did call him like 8 times while this alarm is going off to figure out how to shut it off. Of course, he didn't answer the phone.
Yeah.
So,
but then the officer didn't say, like, well, we need to verify. Oh, that's cool.
No. I think once he realized that I did indeed have a code and that I was relatively calm, then I probably knew what I was doing there. And, like, I had the lawnmower, like, in my hand.
Right.
Like, it was a push mower. So he was like, this guy is obviously not just stealing some random push mower. He's sitting here mowing the grass. So I think all of these clues involved and my beautiful face determined that I was not a criminal.
Yeah, there's punchable faces and there's trustable faces.
Yes.
You've got more of a trustable face.
That's right. Don't you forget it, people out there of Nashville. Very trustable show you're listening to here on 102.5 The Game. Well, Joe, we're going to switch gears and talk a little hockey now. And I had this thought yesterday when I'm thinking about the Predators and their series coming up against the Coyotes. This, to me, now feels like John Hines' team. And what I mean by that is this. You know, you come in on January the 7th or whatever the date was. You're picking up midseason. You don't really have any time to put in your system, your ideals. And you could do it a little bit. But practice days in January and February in the NHL are few and far between. You're just basically trying to make sure your body holds up, that you can play every other night. That's basically how it works once you get into game 45, 50, 55 of the NHL season. To me, now that you've had this pause and John Hines has had time over the pause to dissect what he likes about certain players, what he doesn't like, strengths, weaknesses, all these different things, and the camp that they just went through, now is the time where I think you can start to judge what John Hines is as a coach for the Predators. And I don't mean judge as in like, hey, his job's going to be in jeopardy or anything like that. I mean, you're going to see what his blueprint is and maybe his fingerprint on this team for the first time when things get rolling tomorrow for an exhibition game, but certainly on Sunday in game one against Arizona.
Yeah, I think that all makes great sense. I would ask you, what do you think might look different with that? Like with this time and, you know, a lot of it still in conversations and analysis and things like that, but still this camp now too. Do you think we'll see something that's like, oh, okay, that looks different than maybe that transitional period when he first started?
I think a big thing, and I saw him working on this at training camp a lot, and they did it to a certain degree when he first came in, but not really much where you could change a lot in a course of a season where your system is just so built into your head. How often have we seen, like, Yossi and Ekholm and Ellis just carrying the puck from one end of the ice all the way up through. And that's going to happen from time to time just with how gifted Roman Yossi is.
Yeah, like
still.
Sometimes you want him doing that. And then he'll weave through everyone and score.
But
whatever.
One thing John Hines really preaches is, like, if you're a defenseman in the D zone, as soon as you get that puck, you need to be looking up and finding one of your forwards and getting through. Because no matter how fast you skate, Roman Yossi skates pretty fast. You're not skating faster than your ability to pass the puck up the ice. So one thing I think is going to be really different is once Yossi or Ellis or Ekholm, Fabro, whoever it is, gets the puck, their first inclination, rather than looking around trying to see where they can move to with their feet, is going to be, okay, which one of my forwards on the wing up here is streaking down with an ability to move the puck up the ice quicker? He worked on that a lot, and I'm interested to see if some of the habits that maybe the Predators had before, maybe that's out of their game now, and they're more open to moving the puck up the ice quicker. And that's a big reason, even the small phases of it, that's a big reason why I think Kyle Turris was playing better, and especially Mikael Granlin was playing better, because those are big parts of their game, having the puck on their stick entering into the zone where they can look around and make decisions from that point. Because, you know, when Yossi or whoever else is bringing the puck in the zone and you're just kind of trying to float to a spot, sometimes it takes your creativity away as a player. So that's just one example of what I think could be different with this system. We'll see what other differences and kind of nuances he brings to the table, but that's one thing I've really noticed.
So, like with LaViolette then, was it more, you know, he just preferred that way, or he just knew, look, the strength of this team is in the decor and I want them to be as involved as possible?
I think that's what it was.
Power play, I mean, they had 2D a lot, right?
Yeah. I don't think LaViolette was opposed to pushing the puck up the ice or anything like that. I just think he knew that they have a weapon on defense, especially in Roman Yossi, but in a few other guys as well, especially when PK was here. I mean, you've got Subban and Ekholm, Ryan Ellis, Roman Yossi. No other team could do that, where defensemen can control the play and control the rush as much as they do. So I don't think he was opposed to doing what John Hines wants to do with this group. I just think over time, as the defensemen started to carry the puck more and more, it just became more of a habit for them. And maybe sometimes you don't even realize it, that you're giving plays up that were there for a split second, but that time that you're moving around with the puck on your stick, it's gone. So those are things I think John Hines identified, and he's come in. He wants things to move a little bit quicker in that aspect.
You know, something that you're not going to hear much, I think probably especially in the NHL, just the way people, you know, there's a lot less opening up in the NHL in general. But you also wonder if the change in voice is good. I think these guys respected LaViolette a lot.
Yeah.
I think people in general respect LaViolette a lot. Obviously, we know Kyle Turris and LaViolette did not see things eye to eye. But I wonder also if there's anything refreshing about this from that perspective. And if it, I don't know, maybe takes hold a little more now because you've had this reset too. Because, again, you're just going into scramble mode. Your coach got fired. You're scrambling to get in the postseason and play better. A lot of individuals are scrambling to play better. And here's this new guy. Okay, we got to learn the system. But now maybe you've had this time. You have a little more appreciation. You've had conversation. I don't know. I'm just wondering if that stuff, like the environment is a little bit more secure now because they've had this reset and this time.
Yeah, I wonder that too. And like, even what I've said about now's the time where I think you can start to kind of judge what John Hines' blueprint is on this team, do we even think that that's fair? Because normally, like, when you have a training camp, like he just had, number one, the training camp's longer. You've got exhibition games. And then you have an 82-game season to kind of see the process unfold. Well, obviously, this time around, you're not going to have that. You're going straight into a playoff-style setting. So I'm not even sure that now is even fair to begin judging him. I just mean it from the standpoint of now I think is when you're going to start to see his blueprint start to take hold on this roster. Whereas before, even though you come in and you try to change things, like how much can you really change mid-season in an NHL season coming in January? Like there's probably a limited amount of things you can do at that point.
Right. Now, obviously, the power play, and we've talked about this. We'll talk about it until they're done playing, but how much does all that work on trying to just sort of get these guys to free up and be more natural, I think, is some of it on the power play. Will that take hold? I mean, I think that's just a huge part of the question of whether they can, you know, make an advance. You've got to be able to do something on the power play. And that, I think, is one thing that if you're watching a game and then you want to focus in on something that he's tried to change, that's going to be key. And it'll be compared to a year ago when that whole season of, now you're in charge of the power play. Now you're in charge of the power play. And it looked the same. It's Subban taking a blast. It looks the same. Everybody scrambles. Subban just, you know, slapped it. I mean, you know, that this is now, I feel like we're going to see some better. I think we already have seen some things that have gotten better this year, but maybe significantly different and better.
Yeah, and it's going to have to be. I mean, we saw it. We've known it all along, but we saw it firsthand last year. Like, how much of a difference in that Dallas series could two power play goals have made instead of zero? I mean, it's at least, I think, enough of a difference to force a game seven.
Yeah, get one in game six and you're home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even just about the amount that you score, but timely power play goals. Like, when they really matter, when you're it's a 1-1 series and you're in game three with a power play in a tie game, 4 minutes left in the third period, that's the time you need to score on the power play. Like, it's about when you score on the power play, too. And there haven't been enough instances with the Predators lately of, and by lately, I mean like the last 2 years, of clutch power play goals. That's part of it, too, in the playoffs. They had that in 2017. They scored some clutch power play goals during that run as well. That's going to be important, too, is not only just the effectiveness of the power play, but when they really matter, you got to be able to come through in those moments.
Yeah. I mean, it's, a lot of this is still, it's Ryan Johansson. What are you doing? Kyle Turris, you know, different individuals. But, yeah, from the John Hines perspective, I mean, he's got to have a way better feel now. And I'm sure you can come in and you can look at all the tape you want, and now you're around these guys, but I would think that just his understanding of these guys and how they work together is something he has now that he could not have had even to the point of a regular start time in the playoffs.
Yeah.
So that should be, you know, an advantage for them beyond just having that mental reset for some of these guys who just weren't having seasons they wanted to have.
615-737-1025 is the phone number. We'll take your thoughts on the Preds exhibition game, Joe. Tomorrow, hard to believe, hockey will be back here in Nashville tomorrow from a local perspective. 615-737-1025. When we come back, what kind of underrated or unsung hero for the Predators is going to have a big playoffs for them to make some noise? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. That was Predators head coach John Hines talking about the renewed energy of his team. So as they prepare for Arizona.
Was this your song? This is not his song.
This is AC/DC. This is not.
What AC/DC song is that?
I can't remember. I got to look it up. I mixed that this morning. So
deep cut.
Okay. I always look. Every show I will probably play an AC/DC song. It's just the way of the world. And that's how sports radio should work. No. Everybody should play AC/DC songs as bump music.
I agree. I fancied myself an AC/DC enthusiast and I don't know that one, so impressive.
Got a text in on the text line that says, I would pick Saros as the unsung hero because he has not proven himself in a playoff game yet. But on that note, I would start him over Pekka so you can see what you have for the future. Pekka's been pulled in too many big moments anyway. We will get lucky either way to make a run. Test the future.
Can a goalie be an unsung hero in a playoff run?
If you're playing a lot, I don't know. Probably not.
I just say automatically, it's kind of like
maybe though.
Who's the unsung hero of this NFL team? I'm going with the quarterback.
Well, I get what they're saying though. Like he's never done it before.
Yeah,
in
no,
the playoffs.
Right. Sure. I know. I get that. I guess when I think of unsung hero, I think of someone you don't automatically think of as a key player.
Yeah. Well, I've got a guy in mind that I think could fit this description that we're talking about, but I want to hear yours first. Do you have an unsung hero or two that you're thinking about that could fit this description for the Predators?
I mean, I'm going deep here.
Okay.
There's a lot of, you know, obviously you look in the bottom six, you know, that's usually where you're, but I will say, remember last year in this short playoff run, but Dante Fabbroe was a really... Are you smiling because you were going to...
You took my guy.
Oh, man.
Oh, my goodness.
I can swear. He's not the only one I'm thinking of, but I do think of him. Obviously, he was so impressive in that third pairing last year. It was a really key addition, and it was like, wow, look at this young kid, what he's doing. And so then I think this year people are like, what's next for him? It's just going to be this, you know, and it was – he had an up-and-down year, but – I think he's important. But I'll switch. I'll switch to Austin Watson, okay?
Okay. I mean, you don't have to switch on my account.
Well, Austin Watson to me is – I mean, he's had a tough year.
Yeah.
We talk about – you always talk about top six forwards. You talk about – especially when you have so many of them who haven't produced at the rate they should be producing. But Austin Watson is a guy – I mean, think about how important he's been as a role player in some of these postseasons for the Preds. And obviously, John Hines feels like, I mean, he's getting first crack here to play. And that may change quickly, I would think. Yeah. But, you know, if he steps up to that and plays well, I think that's really big for the Preds. I think it's big for that fourth line. So let's give me Watson. You can have Fabbroe.
All right. Well, I was going to pick Fabbroe because I think people sometimes overlook – how difficult it is to go from what you said, Joe, of being on a third pair as a rookie, playing 11 minutes a night, in, to be honest, a very sheltered kind of a situation, to then basically being thrown to the wolves and playing 21, 22 minutes a night against really good competition alongside Matthias Ekholm. And to your point, there were games this year where I thought Fabbroe looked really good, and there were games where he just looked out of place. You expect that from a 21-year-old kid playing on defense. And that, I mean, I've had multiple coaches and scouts, media members, everybody tell me one of the hardest things to do in hockey is to be a defenseman, a young defenseman, and come in and play at a high level early. Like, defenseman is the hardest one to learn how to play at the NHL level on a consistent basis early in your career. You see young forwards come in all the time, have a ton of success. Goaltenders can do it as well. It's very rare to see a young defenseman come in and not have those growing pains that you go through. I think Fabbroe has gone through those. I'm not saying he's done with them yet, but certainly coming back, you've played in the playoffs before. He was in there last year against Dallas. He spent an entire season now alongside Matthias Ekholm. Fundamentally, and just from a potential standpoint, I love Fabbroe. I think he's going to be a really good player for the Predators. If he could bring it up a notch or two and keep it there on a consistent basis during this run, that's going to be so critical, because then all of a sudden, I'm not going to say you feel as good about your defense pairings as you did when Subban was here, but you at least feel good enough to where you can stick Ekholm and Fabbroe out there against some of these teams, maybe if you get past Arizona, that have multiple lines that can hurt you in a big way. I still feel at times this year Fabbroe may have been a liability in that situation. If he can get to the point where he's not, then I think you feel pretty good about your defensive structure as a whole. So that's why Dante Fabbroe is the guy for me.
Yeah, you explained that much better than I did. So, see, I'm glad that you got Fabbroe. By the way, he turned 22 last month.
He's up to 20. He still looks like
he's 12.
He does.
But he turned 22. And also with the Fabbroe thing, we were talking about the Titans in comparisons. You know, if he solidifies that spot and plays well, then you can stop hearing maybe as much about, like, Seth Jones.
Yeah.
You know, because, like, if you have that fourth defenseman and then you have Johansson struggling, then it comes back
There's
to,
a lot of
how
Seth
could
Jones
you have
talk.
Traded Seth Jones? You know, it's like, well, I'll say until the end of time it was a good trade.
Yes.
There's a Stanley Cup final in this franchise's history that does not exist without that trade. But I understand. I understand why people say stuff like that. But, yeah, he's big. And, you know, that third pairing, like you said, I mean, it's 10 minutes, 10, 11 minutes, whatever it is. But, like, Jared Tenorti is a guy. There aren't a lot of guys like Austin Watson. He's a guy who has a physical, imposing presence.
Yes.
That you hope in those moments, you hope you don't get caught in bad situations with those guys, but you hope you can utilize that.
Yeah, you just got to follow my general third pairing rule for every third pairing in the NHL. Just don't get killed. Just get out there. You don't have to score. Nothing good has to happen, but make sure nothing bad happens. That's my general rule for a third pairing in the NHL.
And if you're, you know, if you're Tenorti, hit somebody.
Yeah.
You know, I mean,
a little pop to you.
If you can, yeah, put a body on somebody out there, this team, to me, that just, they don't have enough of that.
I think a lot of people, when you ask the question about underrated or maybe unsung players for the Predators, their response would be like Rocco Grimaldi or Nick Bonino. I understand why they would say that, but I've kind of gotten to the point with those guys where I don't really consider them underrated or unsung anymore just because of how good they were in the regular season. I mean, they were the best line. We talked about it yesterday. Grimaldi, Bonino, Smith, the best line they had in the regular season. So some people may be listening to this saying, well, how could you not have like Bonino or Grimaldi as your unsung guy to watch? That's just because I don't really consider them unsung anymore, but that's just me.
We're going deep, deep cuts here.
Yeah, man.
An AC/DC song I'd never heard before, and we're going deep into the lineup. Yeah, those guys are, I mean, again, Rocco Grimaldi, there's a Nashville Predators postseason in the history of the franchise in which he was the best forward, period,
yeah,
on the team.
It happened. I saw it.
He can't be the unsung hero a year later.
No, it doesn't count that way. Now, I will say Watson, I'm glad you brought him up because it kind of seemed like towards the end of the regular season, he was a little bit in the doghouse. Like, from the standpoint of he wasn't having that great a year, and at the end of the season, he wasn't playing a whole lot either. I mean, he found himself as a healthy scratch. So it is interesting that they've come back here in training camp, and it looks like, anyway, he's going to get the first crack at it in terms of being in the lineup. It's important to run with it because there is back pressure there. I mean, you do have Trennan, who I still feel pretty good about. Blackwell, who he's not going to wow you, but I thought he was pretty solid for what they asked him to do. So if you're Watson in particular, or even a guy like Yarncroke, like you can't afford to start slow because if you do, I don't think Hines is going to wait around too long to put somebody else in there, especially when Trennan and Blackwell, when they have been in there, have played pretty well for the most part. Like, there are very few games that I can recall where you're like, ooh, I don't know, Trennan was kind of bad tonight. Like, I thought he was pretty good for the most part. So if you're Watson, it's important to get in there and make sure you take advantage of that opportunity as well.
So was Watson – was he banged up? Could that be part of it? Is this a – this guy's played a lot of playoff games, has a lot of experience, a little bit of a nod there maybe? Either way, yeah, it's – a quick hook, I think, if the performance isn't better than it was during a lot of the regular season.
When we come back, how do we like this format in terms of what it does for the Preds' chances? We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
That was Predators goaltender Pekkarinen talking about the upcoming opportunity they have in these playoffs, which I guess, quote-unquote, the playoffs technically begin
on August 1st, Preds play August the 2nd against the Arizona Coyotes. The qualifying round, look, it's the playoffs. They're a playoff series. I guess it's just the playoffs to get into the playoffs, if that's how technical you want to be about it.
Well,
we're all about technicalities here.
Well, you know, actually, that brings up an interesting question. So in playoff history, like if you're reading about the Nashville Predators and it's like, you know, franchise has been to the playoffs, whatever, 17 times, does this – if they lose the Coyotes, does this count as one of
them? I think it does. Okay. I think it officially counts.
There you go.
So
they're in the tournament.
They're in the tournament.
They're in the tournament.
Got a text in on a text line from Greg that says, hey, Joe, that AC/DC song is called Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution.
Oh, no, no. I love Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution from the album Back in Black. What is the title, Marquise?
Let's Get It Up.
Let's Get It Up.
Which is a classic AC/DC song title, by the way. But, yeah, no, I love some Rock and Roll Ain't Noise Pollution. Yeah, that was a deep cut. Do you know what album that's on?
For Those About to Rock.
Okay. Yeah, 1982, by the way, AC/DC album.
An encyclopedia.
Not a great AC/DC album, but the second Brian Johnson album. See, I mean, I love AC/DC. I just, that's a deep cut off a so-so album, but. I'm impressed by Marquise for pulling that one out.
So we were talking last segment about our potential unsung heroes for the Predators, and we got a text from our good friend Ryan Porth, who said Kyle Turris as an unsung hero, which I guess if you think about it, he hadn't had a great career with the Predators anyway.
Right.
Would be certainly a change of pace for him to come in the playoffs and just light it up. And Porth went a step further. He predicts that Kyle Turris will lead the Preds in points against the Arizona Coyotes, which if that happens, certainly I think that would qualify as an unsung hero at that point.
Yeah, see, that's like when we talk about unsung hero, I immediately looked at bottom six and no goalies and no Ekholm, Ellis, Josi. That's just how I thought about it.
Yeah.
But I think you can make that case. That's fair. I mean, the expectations for Turris have changed since he's gotten here, right?
Sure.
So, now, if Porth is right, then I think that bodes very well for the Predators.
Assuming everybody else kind of shows up, too.
That's
like,
true.
If Kyle Turris has 6 points and Forsberg has none, he might be in trouble at that point.
That's true. Like, if Turris is this year's Grimaldi, it doesn't matter that much. But I would think that if he plays like that, that means Duchesne's playing well.
Probably so.
Means that line's playing well. I'm making some assumptions about the top line, but... yeah, that would be good for this team, you would think.
So we were talking about the format and how things are going to be constructed this year with the playoffs and whether or not that benefits the Nashville Predators. Got a text in on the text line that says the Preds aren't consistent, so the format could hurt them more than other teams or help them more than other teams, just depending on which side of the bed they wake up. So a little bit of pessimism hanging over from the regular season. I said yesterday on the show, Joe, I think I feel better about the Predators heading into this tournament than I would have had they just completed the regular season and were heading into the Stanley Cup playoffs. Like, I feel better about them being able to reset, being able to have a camp where you're getting a new system installed and put in place. Guys mentally can just kind of be refreshed if they had bad seasons, which, as we know, a lot of their star forwards did. Those guys come in new, refreshed, healthy, ready to go. I feel much better about the Predators heading into this situation than I would have otherwise. Maybe I'm totally wrong, but that's just kind of the vibe I've been getting for me personally over the course of the past couple weeks.
I agree, and it totally makes sense. It's also hockey, and you make a few mistakes, you have some tough luck, you face some great goaltending, and you get bounced in 3 games, even though there's all this good feel and everybody's all ready. And let's just remember 3 years ago, a lot of people are like, oh, I had them beating the Blackhawks. Oh, yeah.
It's like all those people that are at the Music City Miracle. Like, yeah, okay.
Right, yeah.
Apparently 150,000 people are at Nissan Stadium for the Music City Miracle.
Exactly. So, like, that team was frustrating for a lot of the season. It was okay. They even at the end, they could have been the 7 seed. They kind of blew that, right? Like, there was a lot of like, eh.
Yeah.
And then what happens? You just, the tournament in hockey, it really is a start over.
Yeah, I mean, it is. And it's, I'm laughing just because I think about what the narrative was in 2017 for most of that year. I mean, they just got in PK Subban. If you remember back before that season started, they were a very popular pick to be maybe not winning the Stanley Cup, but at least making a deep run in the conference final, cup final.
Yeah.
And then you get through the regular season. PK got hurt for like a month and a half, and they were up and down, got the 8 seed in the – or the second wild card into the playoffs. And
just called
a lot of Preds fans were like, this has not been a good year. I'm disappointed. And then, of course, they run through that way. I'm not going to say it has a similar vibe this time around, but would I be surprised if the Predators got to the conference final this time? No, I don't think so. Just with the way the NHL works and the pause and just how unique of a circumstance this is, I don't think I'd be surprised.
No, I think that they've got a team that is built to make a run like that. It's just we haven't, you just have not seen long enough stretches of that from this team. You've definitely seen moments, obviously. I mean, in a hockey season, even in a shortened hockey season, what, 66 games?
Yeah.
You saw moments. You saw some progress before the break. But it is. It's just, it's a totally different thing. And you get on something, and a lot of it is your goalie gets going on something, and we don't even know for sure who that's going to be. But I also think that the fact that we don't know could be an advantage for them.
What do you think specifically of the matchup between the Preds and the Coyotes? Because the Coyotes have been a team that on the road have given the Predators just a ton of trouble over the course of the last 4 or 5 years. Obviously, you're not going to have to worry about the road part of it this year, being in their building against their crowd, the 8 o'clock start time, whatever the case you want to throw out there is. Everybody's in the same situation. You know, you take a glance at their lineup, and they've got a few guys that scare you when you're talking about Taylor Hall, Phil Kessel, Clayton Keller, Oliver Ekman-Larsson. You know, Darcy Kuemper's had a great year in net. So there are guys there that if they're playing up to their potential, they're going to give you a lot of problems. But I look at the team as a whole and then look at the Predators, especially if the Predators are playing close to their potential. This is a series I think you got to win. I'm not going to put a number on how many games, 3, 4, or 5, because that's hard to do in a 7-game series, much less a 5-game series. But if you're the Predators, this is a series you need to win. There's really no excuse to lose it, in my opinion.
Yeah, I mean, I think the Predators are just better, but like you said, they've had a weird thing with the Coyotes. I mean, and even like when the Coyotes were just awful.
Yeah.
Like awful, awful. It's still like they beat the Preds like 5-1, and you're like, what is happening? They didn't show up for this game. Obviously, like you said, Kemper's been really good. You know, a pretty good defensive team. I do feel like, you know, we'll, if they get to the Blues, then we'll talk about it the other way. Like, man, they dominated the Blues this year. But I still, like, don't love that matchup for them on paper with the Blues. And in this way, this team, I think, is a better matchup in terms of they're not going to get beat up by this team. The Dallas Stars beat up this team last year. So I think from that perspective, it's a good matchup. I mean, I think they just have more good players. They're a better team on paper. They have more good players. And it's just also postseason hockey, and I wouldn't even approach shocked if the Coyotes won this series. I feel like game one, always important in series and all that stuff, but game one in a 5-game series, you're setting that tone and you're possibly creating doubt in goaltending and causing quick lineup decisions. It's a real big one Sunday.
It is, and one of the weird parts about Arizona is, or at least has been in the regular season, is you look defensively, I mean, they're a really good team defensively, but they can't score. Like, they haven't been able to score. Like, you've got Phil Kessel and Taylor Hall, Clayton Keller, to a lesser degree, Nick Schmaltz, who's a good player, but he's not a great player. But they haven't been able to score. Like, Nick Schmaltz leads the Coyotes in points, at least in their time with the Coyotes, with 45 points. Roman Josi is in the 60s. I mean, they just haven't been able to score. So part of that, I think, if you're the Predators, that's good news for you. You're hopeful that that trend continues. But the other side of that is you look at the lineup they have, and you're like, well, they do have Taylor Hall. They do have Clayton Keller. They do have Phil Kessel. At some point, those guys are going to be able to score and break out. You're just hoping it's not right now against you.
Yeah, I mean, Taylor Hall is a stud. Taylor Hall is a big-time really player. It has not so far been Taylor Hall production, but that doesn't mean that he can't be a real problem for you in this series. It's obviously an interesting reunion too, you know, of Taylor Hall and John Hines. I don't know what does that mean. I don't know. I don't know if it means anything in terms of, I mean, look, everybody knows who Taylor Hall is. The Preds are going to be,
they'll be aware of him.
I mean, look, they have one line you worry about, you know. I mean, really, that's the way that they've been this year. So, but it's just when you have a player like that, sometimes a guy like that can win a series for you just by going off. So, I mean, hey, look, they're a pretty good team. I mean, a lot of this is just the Predators, some of the Predators players doing what we've been talking about all year, which is finding their best game and and finding their game with each other.
When we come back, there was some big news yesterday in the world of high school football here in the state of Tennessee. We'll get into that next. This is Morning Drive with Robbie Stanley and Joe Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back into Morning Drive here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley alongside Joe Rexroad. Munson spinning the hits back there.
Joe, that's
my
song.
Really like this.
That's my song.
That's your song?
For today.
This is what you chose?
Little Black Sheep.
Okay.
1990.
You said you were jamming out to this yesterday while you were cooking dinner?
That's impressive. I did. I was. Yeah. Play Little Black Sheep. Cooking my 12-year-old some shrimp, pesto shrimp flatbreads.
How would you describe your culinary abilities? Are you well-rounded in your abilities to make food?
I love cooking. I try. I try hard. I do a lot of crock pot. Okay. We got an air fryer now. We talked about the air fryer.
Oh, yeah.
I load up it's the essential. Air fryer. So, yeah, I like to grill. I mean, I like to try different recipes. My daughter and I are sort of the official family chefs, so we like to collaborate a lot and try different things. But am I good? No. No, I'm not good.
Look, I mean, let's the effort's all imagined. The grilling part of it, I can really get behind.
Yeah.
That's my thing. Like, burgers, brats. You ever had grilled pineapple? It's awesome.
Uh-uh.
It's great. You should try it.
Maybe on a skewer like a
yeah.
Like I've never like so you take a pineapple and just
cut it up, grill it. Yeah,
sounds good.
Yeah, it's really good.
That's better than like the canned and syrup stuff
better.
That we have a lot. Yeah.
Absolutely. Well, Joe, there was some big news yesterday regarding high school football in the state of Tennessee. Governor Bill Lee signed Executive Order 55, which allows for contact sports to resume, provided that they follow the requirements of the TSSAA. So it looks like, if all goes according to plan now, high school football is going to be able to not only return, Joe, they're going to be able to start as scheduled on time as well. So big news yesterday in the state of Tennessee.
Yeah, and I mean, I definitely, obviously, we kind of thought things would be pushed back, and all of a sudden it's like, boom, here it is. Great news for high school football players. You know, for families of players, for coaches. I think it's a, you know, it's a strange situation when you have schools that aren't opening. I mean, my kids are going to be sitting at home. I mean, look, my kids are going to be sitting at home doing schooling. I mean, I've got a 12-year-old who's on his way to football practice right now, you know, middle school football, which has been basically socially distanced exercising at this point. But, I mean, it's – look – there's a lot to all this, and it's very complicated, and it gets very contentious, but mental health is part of this too, and I feel terrible for all the kids in the spring, especially you think about seniors and spring sports. And you, I mean, it's a lot of your identity as a young person if you are an athlete who puts so much time into it and you lose that season, and I would feel terrible for especially like a senior this year who didn't get a chance to play his senior year of high school football. It's special stuff. I also totally understand anyone who doesn't want to get involved in this and wants to stay out and be safe, and I hate that people would get ridiculed for that. I mean, I hate that NFL players take crap for opting out right now because they're worried about a virus that's killed more than 150,000 people in this country. You know, it's
like
both things can be true. That's one of those both things can be true.
A bunch of Packers fans yesterday were going after Devin Funchess for opting out just because they don't have another wide receiver behind him other than Devontae Adams. I was like, well, that's not Devin Funchess's problem. That is your organization's problem.
And draft a receiver.
Being idiots and drafting a quarterback in the first round when you have Aaron Rodgers for four more years.
You got,
blame them.
Yes, and I can see some Packers fandom maybe. Yeah.
Right here.
Right, yeah. Hey.
Still very salty.
It's a heck of a receiver's draft, Packers.
Yeah, it was. Must have been nice to watch.
Matt LaFleur will figure it out.
I'm sure he will.
But no, it's. I mean, listen, I'm – every single decision when it comes to schooling, I mean, look, everything. I mean, I think personally I would have liked to have seen Governor Lee mandate masks because I think it's pretty clear at this point that they do work, they do help, and that some people are just going to ignore that and be selfish. And you know, the government can mandate plenty of things, including, again, seat belts. I mean, you know, this is – it's not fascism for a governor to mandate masks. But honestly, I'm glad to see high school football moving in a positive direction. I hope everything else moves in a better direction. So, I mean, I hope my kids and our people who have kids here, like in Williamson County, can eventually go to school and be around. I mean, my daughter broke down crying when she found out that she was going to have to not be around her friends for the start of this school year, which she was so excited. I mean, there's more to this. You got to take the virus seriously, but there are a lot of other things that are bad about what is happening in society because of the virus.
Well, it, to that point, like, I'm so hopeful that things with high school football go well and we don't see these large cases of outbreaks or anything like that, because yes, in all likelihood, if the kids playing high school football get this virus, they're probably going to be okay. I get that. I understand that. But just from these communities, like, I grew up in Hendersonville. Hendersonville High School football is a gigantic part of what we do in Hendersonville. I mean, it's established, it's rooted in the community, and it's still, to me, I think, football probably in its purest form. Like, it's just kids going out there that love to play. Once you start getting into college and certainly into the NFL, like, there are different circumstances involved with it. High school football, to me, is just one of the greatest things in sports, because it's just football, man. They're just going out there to play football, have a good time with their friends. So I am so hopeful that everything goes well with this. People follow the proper protocols that the TSSAA has thrown out there to make sure they're staying as safe as they possibly can. Now, look, there's going to be some inherent risk. I mean, you're tackling each other. You're breathing on each other. You're blocking each other. I understand all that. But I'm just really hopeful, because I think just from an emotional standpoint, this could be a huge lift for so many communities in our area.
No question. No question about it. It is and, you know, it's football. Of the three levels, you think about, like you said, high school football is the purest, and it's the love of the game. It's just this, for most people, it's such a small window in life. I mean, I was talking to my son, you know, he's going in eighth grade, and it's like, I mean, look, in all likelihood, I mean, we don't know what may happen down the road, but in all likelihood, you have 5 years left to play football in your life. That's the truth for most people, and those are cherished times, huge for communities. And then you have professionals who are getting paid. Who, I mean, look, it's, you can opt out, you can get paid. I mean, it's a risk that you're taking. You know, the in-between is the college athlete who is part of a huge industry of money flowing that is so dependent on them playing, but there's not the compensation for it. I mean, that, and again, that's why it's, if we go through this fall and we see high school football and we see pro football, but we don't see college football, I won't be all that surprised.
Right, exactly. Let's go to Nate, who wants to weigh in. Nate, thanks for calling in to ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, guys. So you may have just answered my question with the last statement you said, Joe, but how much do you think college football takes in the stock in the high school football? I know it's a lower level of football, but it's kind of similar in the fact that they would be traveling to different, you know, team schools to go play.
Thanks for calling, Nate.
Yeah, it's a good question. I think it's just independent, though. I mean, college football is, well, it's going to be decided really at the conference level. Although I still don't buy the idea that, like, the SEC is going to play and everybody else can sit down. Like, if you don't have a national championship at the end of the road anymore with college football, we are now conditioned to only care about the playoff.
Yeah.
Like, I don't.
Well, I mean, you could just claim one like Alabama did back in the day. Just start claiming two or three at a time.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. You know, multiple selectors picked Cumberland University as a 1903.
Munson is shooting his eyes at me right now.
Well, I wasn't even alive. I don't even think my parents were alive when that happened. So
Alabama has actually won actual ones, so you know, at least you got that
going
for you.
In my lifetime, the ones that I actually were, you know, alive to watch.
Yes, yes. But no, I mean, I think in different sports or different states are going to do different things with high school football too. So even within these college conferences, you're going to have different states approaching high school football differently. So yeah, it's not I really think it's state level for high school, and it's conference, and it's presidents, and all that for college. And well, we're coming up on some big decisions real soon there, by the way.
Yeah, no question about it. And as far as high school football is concerned, like, once I saw Florida's going to play, Georgia's going to play, Alabama's going to play, I figured it wouldn't be too long before Tennessee made the decision. But, you know, we're getting close now to the point where you kind of had to make a decision either way, because if they're going to play and they're going to start on time, well, you're going to have to start training and practicing and getting ready as if you're going to start the season on time, even though you're not going to have any of these jamborees or scrimmages or anything like that. So I wasn't necessarily surprised that the decision went the way it went yesterday. Again, I'm just hopeful everything works out the way we all hope it does.
Yes. Safety.
No question about it. When we come back, we're going to dive back into the Titans discussion and react to a couple of things Mike Vrabel said yesterday at his press conference. That's next. You're listening to Morning Drive live from the Wholesale Inc. studios, powered by RumbleOn.com here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.